I'm going to introduce you a framework to characterize interaction costs in information visualization. My name is Heidi Lam. This work was done at the University of British Columbia in Canada. The reason why I started this project was because this time last year, I was telling you study results of multiple level interfaces. We were thinking if we were to give multiple levels of detail to the users, then it should help them in some tasks. It turns out that it didn't, and we were surprised. So we tried to figure out what it means. We thought, well, perhaps if the user has to manipulate multiple levels of details, then they have to have a more complex interactions, and interaction costs may be there to bring. But even while I was telling you guys this story, I was wondering, what exactly are interaction costs? And later on, I thought, how much of an impact do they have on overall interface usability when compared to visual costs, and how prevalent they are in our interfaces? So I went home and Googled with the terms interaction costs and visualization, and I didn't find anything. I moved on to digital libraries, still didn't find anything, so I thought I got the query terms wrong, so I started reading InfoFIS papers. And my paper reading got a lot more systematic. Started with InfoFIS, moved on to IVS, which is Information Visualization Journal, and then moved on to IJHCS, which is International Journal of Human-Computer Studies, and then moved on to TOCAI, which is Transaction of Computer-Human Interaction. So from these four venues, I got 484 papers. I didn't read the papers that did not have an evaluation. I only showed scenario because they didn't involve any participant outside of authors. And for the rest of 150 papers, I binned them into three buckets. The first one is informal study, where there wasn't really that much of a structure to the study. Essentially, they put the interface in front of some people and asked them, what do you really think? From that bucket, I got two papers that mentioned interaction costs. The next category is qualitative study, where there are some structure to the study. Sometimes they ask participants to perform specific tasks, and they collect the feedback either in terms of interview, observation, or questionnaires. And from that bucket, I got six papers that mentioned interaction costs. The majority of the paper came from quantitative study, or most likely called user study in the papers, where they put participants usually in a laboratory and ask them to perform a number of set tasks and measure time and accuracies. And from that bucket, I got 24 papers that mentioned interaction costs. So altogether, I got 32 papers. From that, I got 61 reports of interaction costs and 14 design recommendations. Before I move on, I should probably tell you what I mean by interaction costs. I borrowed the term from Winograd and Flores, which says interaction costs occurs when interfaces become obstacle to be overcome rather than a tool that a user can use to help with the tasks. To give you an idea what a report and a design recommendation is, I have an example here. This one is Peterson et al.'s Data Lens published at TOCAI in 2004. One of the reports they found was the most serious issue we observed concerned tab targets in the user interface being too small. Experienced PC users use their fingers to tab on target in the user interface, and then the report continues. For that particular problem, the authors offered a design recommendation, which is for PDAs, create interaction targets that are as large as possible so that users can use calendar with their fingers instead of a stylus. I didn't manage to put all 61 reports and 14 design recommendations into an 8-page paper, but they are available online, and the link is also in the paper. So I got these reports. What I did was I looked at them and grouped the similar ones together, and then I look at these groups to see if I can find a structure, and I came up with a framework. Before I talk about a framework, I think maybe I should tell you the biggest limitation of the framework. What I think of as the biggest limitation is it's based entirely on reports. And I know that the reports are not complete, because out of the 114 papers that actually did a user study, only 32 mentioned interaction costs in the paper. The trouble is I don't really know why the interaction costs are not mentioned. It could be because the interface were very well designed, there was no interaction costs, or the user study actually did not set out to measure interaction costs. So for example, one popular way of doing user study was to put the user in a room and then close the door without an observer. So in that case, just based on computer logs, it may be difficult to infer interaction costs from these data, and we may be missing a lot of them. Even when I did get some reports, they are not standardized measurements, and they are not standardizing also the reporting. So in other words, the reports are not objective. They are from the author's insights and conjecture. But as you will see, these are also very useful. So having said that, this is the framework. It is adapted from Norman's seven stages of action, where he has seven stages and two gulfs. I've added a cost to each of these stages, and I've also added a gulf of goal formation. I'm going to illustrate this framework with reports I've found in the papers I've read. The first step is, where should the user start? What is my analysis question? Which part of the data should I focus on? In some cases, that can be very difficult, especially when the user has a very complex data and very large data. For example, Alberto et al. In 2006, when they were evaluating S-graph, they found that users would be able to navigate around just fine, but had no idea where they would start to look for interesting features. As a result, they sometimes stumble upon something interesting, but spend most of the time randomly browsing the data. Sometimes users may approach in visualization without a question in mind, and they might be inspired by what is displayed on the visualization. But if the interface offered them too many distractions, it can be difficult to focus. So that was the case that Cheng found in 2006 in using Yahoo ES. She reported, subject has difficulty obtaining precise information from Yahoo ES. 10 subjects said that Yahoo ES has too many options to choose from and hence distracted them from finding relevant information. So if user cannot form a valid analysis goal, then they're in this gulf of goal formation. Once they got a goal, the next step is to translate that goal into system operations. And that may be a non-trivial endeavor because some interfaces offer a lot of alternatives in doing the same thing. So for example, Kafka, when they're evaluating Spotfire, said that while Spotfire offers several representation in parallel, in many cases, not all of them are suitable for solving a given problem. It took users considerable time to decide on the right representation and to correctly set the coordinates and the parameters, particularly when the solution requires several steps. This seems to be caused both by the wealth of the visualization that the system offers, but also by the restriction each one of them imposes since it has been selected. So if user cannot figure out how to translate a goal into system operation, they're in this gulf of execution. So once they got the operation, the next step is to figure out what are the physical sequences. And they can get into problem when the interaction vocabulary of the different parts of the interface may not always be the same. So that's what Hornbeck found in 2002 when they were looking at an overview with detail. The overview window and the detail window did not share the same vocabulary all the time. So they found that subject habits formation highlighted some limitation in the interfaces. At least 8 subjects tried to use a way of navigating from the overview window in the detail window and vice versa. And they got confused because these two windows did not share the same vocabulary. Another trouble that you may run into is when the input device actually got overloaded. So for example, Berling et al. In 2006, where they were looking at a PDA application for zoomable user interfaces, they have a zoom plus slide technique. And they found that 7 subjects mentioned that they had trouble with the sliding technique of zoomable user interface. As a result, some subjects accidentally triggered a zoom operation when actually trying to slide. So let's say they figure out the physical sequence. The next step is they have to carry it out. And sometimes it's quite difficult, especially when the targets are very small. Obviously, you want to make the targets as big as possible, but that compromises the display capacity, so there's a trade-off there. There's one technique that when the user's cursor moves closer and closer to the target, then the target becomes bigger and bigger, so it's easier to select. But unfortunately, that has a side effect of making the target move. And moving targets are very difficult to select. Another popular motion of physical sequence is dragging. But unfortunately, dragging is slow and hard, especially on small devices where people have to drag with the stylus, or on very large devices where they have to go a long distance before they hit the target. Even though we may think that individual motion doesn't really carry that much of a cost, but over time, the costs can add up. So let's say the user has fed all this information to the system. The next step is to figure out what the system is trying to tell them. In order to evaluate what the system is trying to say, they have to see the changes first. And sometimes it's difficult, especially when the screen is very cluttered. That's what Sayari et al. Found in 2004 when they're evaluating SpotFire. They said SpotFire Palo Coordinate View employs a poorly designed selection mechanism. Selected lines in its parallel coordinate results in occluding visual highlights that make it very difficult for users to evaluate which genes were selected. So if the users cannot see what has been changed, then obviously they cannot evaluate the outcome. So let's say they saw the changes. The next step is, what does it mean? Figuring out what it means usually means that the user has to compare the mental model of the interaction with what exactly happened on the screen. And sometimes that can be difficult, especially when there is an automatic or machine intelligence algorithm behind it that the user may not understand. And that's the case Saturna and McKinney found in 2005 with automatic reorderable matrix. They said for some participants, it was difficult to accept that the same setting of the slider would sometimes produce a new reordering due to the heuristic nature of the reordering algorithm. Another problem that the user may run into is information may be all over the place on the screen. So they have to associate among different time frames and different views. A similar problem is they may only be shown the local part and they have to associate that with the global part of the information. So that's what Kumar et al. Found in 1997 when they are evaluating PDQ tree browser. They find that subject got somewhat disoriented when the level of the tree was changed. This is because the layout algorithm generates a fresh layout whenever the tree structure changes, i.e. whenever more or less levels are required to be seen. So if the user cannot figure out what the visualization means, then they're in this gulf of evaluation. So let's say they figure out what happened on the screen. They have to take the information from the screen to the real world to see if the output actually helped them in their analysis goals. Usually that requires comparing between previously viewed data, so the interface should support refining. Unfortunately, many of the studies used research prototypes that did not really have a good history mechanisms, but there are some techniques that supported refining better than others. For example, the overview plus detail technique was found to be better at supporting refining than focus plus context technique because the overview remained pretty static over the exploration. So it seems like I painted a rather bleak picture that anything can go wrong, did go wrong at some point. The question is, of course, does it really matter? I personally think it does, and I'm glad that somebody else is agreeing with me. Sarai et al. In 2004 says, the design of interaction mechanism in visualization is critically important. Usability can outweigh the choice of visual representation. So what can we do? I think as designers, we can identify these costs and try to narrow the gulfs. And as researchers, we can better understand these interactions costs by doing more research. The first gulf I'm going to talk about is the gulf of evaluation, where user got a goal, and they need to figure out how to translate that into system operation, into physical sequences, and then carry out these sequences. From the design recommendation I've read in these papers, generally complex interaction is difficult. So the guide is to aim for a small set of simple and predictable interactions, because having too many options for the users is difficult, and also having to execute complex sequences is also difficult. And it's unclear if this difficulty can be completely trained away. But then, of course, giving them a simplistic set of interactions has a cost because the user now may not have a fine-tune of control over the interaction. One example is keep all the interaction there so they can fine-tune it, but also give them a shortcut to group them together. One example is using Control-P to activate the printer and print in default settings, but if the user wants to change the settings, then they can go through the dialog boxes. The second gulf is the gulf of evaluation going from user understanding what is happening on the screen to taking that understanding into the real world to help to solve their problems. Because of the large data sets that we tend to encounter nowadays, having some sort of machine intelligence may be very, very useful to help user in their analysis. But if the process is completely automated, then user is not kept in the loop and they may not understand what the output means. So keeping the user in the loop when using automatic algorithm is maybe a better choice. So there's a catchy phrase called augmentation rather than automation. Another trouble that the user can run into is information may be scattered among different parts of the screen. So commonly used solutions may not be adequate. They individually are very good, but they may not be adequate. For example, using animation to associate temporal frames and linking and brushing to associate multiple views are very good solutions, but a number of authors have also suggested adding landmarking as an additional visual cue to help user reorient. Another theme that I've found in the papers I've read was to support refining better. If a user can go back to a previous state in their exploration, then you encourage them to explore more, and exploration is the essence of exploratory data analysis. Also, if the user can see different data projections that they've visited before, it will help reflection in analysis. I left the goal of goal formation to the last because that one is difficult. It's difficult because if the user do not know what they want, they cannot come up with an analysis question, then how can the interface think for them? For the two reports that I found on this topic, they did not against each other. One of them said it's an important aspect, we should address it. The other said, well, maybe they are not a candidate to use my visualization. So I personally think that it is an important aspect and it should at least be considered in the design. In terms of research, let's look back at the question that I asked myself early in this talk. I think this work started to scratch on the surface of what exactly an interaction costs, and it's definitely not complete. The work does not help answer the second or the third question of how much of an impact do they have in overall interface usability when compared to visual costs and how prevalent they are in our interfaces. So more work obviously has to be done. In order to move on from here, one possible way to look at it is to see the limitation of my current work and see how we can all patch it up. The first and the main limitation is this framework is based entirely on reports collected. So the reports came from user study. So if we all do more user study and evaluation, then we'll add data points to the big picture. More importantly, I think we need to focus on different aspects of interaction. So this is the framework again with the numbers of report per costs that I found in the papers. And you can notice that there's a lot of low level costs like motion costs, but not a lot of higher level costs like cognitive costs, perhaps because they are more difficult to identify and to measure. Another limitation is this work was done by me and me alone. So obviously, we need other people to provide different perspective and also to check on my errors and my inherent biases in both identifying these costs and in interpreting these costs because, as I said, they are not objective and they are not standardized in their reporting. In general, I think doing more meta-analysis and review will help us as a community to figure out what we know and what we don't know collectively. So in summary, I developed a framework of interaction costs based on reports collected from 61 papers from a larger pool of 484 papers from four venues, InfoVis, IVS, IJHCS, and Tokai. The framework was adapted from Norman's seven stages of actions, which he had already seven steps, and I added seven costs to it. And he had two gulfs, the gulf of execution and evaluation, and I added the gulf of goal formation. What I learned from this review was I think we need a more standardized way of reporting study results in literature so it's easier for people to understand and to reuse the results from previous studies. Also, I think that we also need a more focus on interaction evaluation, especially in the cognitive aspects of it. And generally, I like systematic review and wish more people would do it too. Last but not least, I would like to thank my supervisor, Sharon Munsler, for supporting me in this work. And I would like to thank my fellow InfoVis groupmate, Aaron and Peter, who read the very, very dense paper not only once, but twice and gave me a lot of good feedback. Thank you for your attention.
So we have time for a question or two, if somebody wants to come up to the mic. Find out if this is a question or not. Nope. So. Good. Well, we don't have. Okay, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine Plaisant, University of Maryland. Well, thank you, Heidi. It's an interesting paper. Could you comment on the aspect of benefits? You know, when we think cost benefit analysis. Where, you know, were there situations where it cost something but didn't give you anything? Or was it always worth it? You know, could you comment on that? And was it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this work cannot answer that question because I cannot weigh how much of a cost, so definitely cannot see the cannot weigh between the cost and the benefit. But there is definitely benefit. For example, interaction helps us to see different data projections, and there's a side benefit that people tend not to mention is people find that when the interface is interactive, then it's more fun to play with, it's more engaging, so they more spend more time and willing to invest more time in working with it.
I think the point is it would be important to point the useless interaction that doesn't bring you anything but costs
right.
a lot.
I'm not saying that interaction is all bad. I'm saying that when it's done wrong, it can carry a cost, and we tend to ignore that.
So we have time for one more question. Sorry, Jing.
My name is Jisoo at Purdue University. Congratulations on your good paper. One question I had is that you use seven stages of Norman seven stages.
Yeah.
And did you see any kind of imbalance between seven different categories, or kind of evenly, you know, balance between seven categories?
As I said in this research agenda, I found a lot of low-level costs. So motion costs and display interpretation costs tend to be very well represented, but the harder to understand, for example, what does it mean when the user has a trouble in defining the analysis goal, that didn't really quite find a lot of papers.
Thank you very much, Heidi.